Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pavitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Project Love podcast. It's Vicky here, the love and dating coach of the Project Love duo, and I have a gorgeous podcast for you today. Here at Project Love, we love to share and celebrate real love stories. We love to go beneath the surface and have deep and meaningful conversations with people about their relationships, looking at things like how they support each other to grow, how they navigate challenges, how they make love last, and the lessons they're learning along the way. It's in hearing people's real love stories that we can learn so much about love and what it takes for a relationship to thrive. And this week's episode is one of those episodes. It's a real love story with the wonderful Lisa Pascoe, who reflects on her beautiful love story with her wife, Becky. Lisa is an intuitive life coach, and she brings invaluable advice and wisdom on life and love to this episode. She is all about being who you are and not who the world tells you to be. This message is right at the heart of her podcast, Brave Hearts Rising, and it's really at the heart of this episode too. In the episode, Lisa shares her experience of coming out back in the 90s when people only talked about the first three letters of LGBTQ+ and her journey to self-acceptance. In her work, Lisa supports empaths, highly sensitive women, and LGBTQ+ folks to slow down, hit the reset button, and have a kinder, gentler relationship with themselves. She does that through one-on-one coaching, both online and in nature, well-being workshops, and nourishing circles. To find out more about Lisa and her wonderful work, head to lisapascoe.com, and all of the links to Lisa's podcast, her Instagram, and her website will be in the show notes. What I found so inspiring about listening to Lisa's story is hearing how her and Becky make this daily commitment to each other. In Lisa's words, every day we recommit to the relationship we're in by choosing to be in that relationship, which I just found so beautiful. This episode is full of wisdom and knowledge and self-awareness, and I can't wait for you to listen to it. Here it is. So Lisa, a big thank you for joining me today for this podcast episode. I'm really, really looking forward to speaking to you and hearing all about your beautiful love story with Becky.
Thank you so much for having me, Vicky. I'm really excited to be on the Project Love podcast.
Yay! It's been a long time in the making, really, hasn't it? I'm glad that we're doing it now.
Yeah, no, it has. I think I chatted to Selena about this a few years back and it just wasn't quite the right time. But now, yeah. I'm excited to be here.
Yay. So we actually first met last week. We had a cup of tea and started to get to know each other because I've heard so much about you from Selena over the years. And it was so nice to actually finally meet you last week and have that cup of tea and catch up. And we were talking about your love story with your partner, Becky. And I'd love to hear all about that story. So in classic love story style, I'd love to know how you and Becky first met.
So we were chatting about this yesterday because it was so much fun to reminisce. And, you know, I remember the first time I saw Becky, and Becky remembers the first time that she saw me in the exact moment I walked through the door of the pub. So we were at a friend's birthday. We were both in relationships at the time. And I just remember thinking, true kind of like Emily Bennett, Darcy style, like, oh, no, it's not. It's Liz. And I remember thinking Elizabeth Bennet, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes, Elizabeth. Yeah.
I remember thinking true Elizabeth Bennet, Darcy style, like, oh, they're a bit annoying. And it really struck me. And I thought she was a bit uptight. And it was just really funny. So that's the first time we met. And what was funny about that night is obviously everyone was drinking a little bit. And the pub owner gave one of our friends some chocolates for their birthday. I presume the walk home, I presume to just steal all the chocolates. And I talk about that because I always say that right from day one, I am myself when I meet people. And like, yeah, there's no false advertising. I don't try and be someone I'm not to attract people in my life. you know, and I think that's important. You know, I think sometimes people try and hide the bits that they think are maybe, oh, they shouldn't show, and they're a bit shy of showing, or they seem as a bad habit. And I just think, just let people see all of you. So that was the first night we met. And then over the course of a couple of months, we kind of saw each other at different social occasions. We had badminton and friends' dinners and things like that. And slowly, you know, both of our respective relationships ended. And so, yeah, it was really weird. And I always think of it as like kind of fate, in the sense of, you know, you can make decisions on your day to day about things that happen, moving house, things, those kinds of things. But sometimes certain things, just big picture is at play and you have no idea. So I actually moved to Portsmouth with my ex, and obviously with the intention of moving here with that person and staying with that person. But it almost felt like the universe maneuvered me here so that I would meet Becky. And without going into too much detail, what ended up happening is my ex ended up going out with Becky's landlady, and Becky obviously and I ended up going out together. And, you know, we've since become like family, and we did a house swap at the end of the day quite early on. But, you know, we have such an amazing friendship, all of us, and we had puppies together. And, you know, it's amazing to have them in our life, but it was just like Becky and I were always supposed to be together. And it's amazing how quickly after that one relationship ending, and then Becky and I were together like 2 or 3 weeks later, it was like there was always a spark between us. There was always this connection, but circumstances were waiting for it to be right before, obviously, we would, you know, it wasn't like I was consciously sitting and thinking, how can I be with this person? But it was just like, there was just kind of like chemistry happening. And yeah, it was only when I was single that I then asked her for coffee, and the rest is kind of history.
And so you said the first time you met there were those little niggles or annoyances. Is that how you describe it?
Yeah, I think of it as that classic, you know, like it, when you have like a romantic movie and at the beginning the two protagonists don't really get on at all, and there's like this like love-hate relationship, and then, you know, they end up falling in love and being together forever and ever. And it was just interesting because I just remember sitting there thinking, this person's really annoying. And at the time she was working as an investigator within the police. And so, yeah. And so she just had this energy about her, which is just really funny because obviously it's been 7 years now.
And then how did things develop? So then you asked for coffee.
Yeah. On the non-date date, she didn't have any idea that it was a date. I saw it as the kind of date. And it was funny because I think she thought I was really bored, because the thing about me is if I'm in a coffee shop and other people are talking, I naturally pick up on the conversation. So I was like listening to the other people and their conversations. So she thought I was just really bored. But of course I wasn't. I was having a great time. And then shortly after that, we went to the cinema to watch Blue is the Warmest Colour. It's a French queer film. And that was really nice. We, you know, we had chips at like the best chip shop in the world, as we kind of dubbed it ourselves, in the car. Like a little glass of Prosecco. And yeah, it was really, really nice. And we've just always really connected. You know, she's a really kind human and she's really thoughtful. And you know, she was in her late 20s and I was in my early 30s. So we were very much kind of at the beginning of our own personal growth journeys. And we've kind of really had to go through that together. And that's worked because we're both similar in terms of our values and being curious about the world, being empathic, wanting to make a change for the better, and just being supportive generally of each other. Yeah, I think that's been really important along the way. I remember very clearly, very early on, us talking about how it had felt like we'd known each other for like lifetimes. You know, some people will think that's really cheesy, but I really remember us doing that. And I remember us doing something, she might be embarrassed by this, but like after about, I can't remember how many months, we got like WhatsApp engaged. It was really funny, but really sweet. It was really sweet. Then we'd always have a little ring at the end of our WhatsApp messages. So we weren't, obviously, we weren't engaged, but it was just like this really sweet thing that we did. And we always said, like, before falling asleep or something, like, see you at the old oak tree. And like meet you in dreamland at the old oak tree. I don't know why an old oak tree, but we always have said that. So it hasn't always been easy by any stretch of the imagination. And in fact, it's definitely gotten easier as we've gotten older and we've become more self-aware about what we need and how to communicate, because I think communication is so important. And of course, when you first meet someone and you're in a relationship, you bring baggage with you. And how much baggage you bring with you depends on how much you've worked through previous stuff and how much you've let go of. And I definitely had baggage around like insecurity, around like jealousy and things like that that was difficult at the beginning. And I think if you have issues around trust or any of those things, it can take time. And again, I think having that self-awareness is really important, and knowing what is your stuff that you're bringing to the table, like how are you contributing to things being tricky at times, and then what is somebody else's stuff. And yeah, that's really important.
Yeah. And that baggage, I mean, the communication is so important, because like you say, we all have it. But when we can actually feel it, feel into it for ourselves, and then actually share what's happening for us with this other person who actually wants to get to know us and you know, has an interest in you know, things that are coming up for us, it really opens the door to that beautiful intimacy and connection, and yeah, to be able to talk about things that you need in the relationship that help you to feel safe and happy and secure and loved. And yeah, I think that really fosters a deeper connection when we can talk about those things.
Yeah, and I think it's tough, and I think it's important for listeners to think about, you know, and acknowledge that it is tough to show all parts of yourself as well, and it's not an overnight thing, because sometimes we can't even witness all parts of ourselves, you know, and it's almost creating safe spaces for ourselves, with ourselves, outside of that relationship, because I think what can happen is you can kind of go through like your teens, just being a bit like a teenager, things can be a bit all over the place, and you hit your 20s and you're having fun. At some point, you start to question things, don't you? Well, not everybody, but at some point in your life, whether it's in your 30s, your 40s, you start to question things and you start to look at your baggage. You start to look at, okay, how do I see the world? What are my beliefs around things? What's holding me back? What do I want out of life? And it's kind of when you start to dig beneath the surface, lots of things can come up, and that can be really tricky. It can be triggering, depending on if you've ever had any trauma or different events, like significant emotional events in your life. And that can be quite a lot. And it's making sure you have a support network in your life that can help you with that, whether that's a support network through friendships, therapy, family. But it's just looking at that, because I think sometimes the mistake people can make is to expect their partner to be the entire support network. And that's not fair because, you know, they have their own stuff to deal with too. And yeah. So it's, yeah, it's making sure there's support for you as individuals as well as the relationship as a whole, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I think it takes a village to create a thriving relationship. And yeah, I totally agree. It's so much pressure to put on your partner to fulfill all of your needs. You know, there are some that only you can fulfill or meet. And there are some that only your girlfriends, friends, family members can meet. And then there are ones that your partner can meet too. And yeah, I think that's such a healthy way of looking at relationships, that it's not always on the couple to provide that environment of happiness and fulfillment. It's actually much bigger than that. And I love the idea of it taking a village, because I think that really, you know, helps to sort of take the pressure off, doesn't it? It helps to take the pressure off your partner.
100%. And it's funny, because that's exactly what came to my mind just as you said it, was around it taking a village. And I think it's also around learning about what messaging did you receive about relationships when you grew up? You know, what because we don't always realize how many stories we have about what it means to be in a loving relationship, what it means to be loved. You know, we all have those like things where we'll say things like, well, if you loved me, you would do X. Because in your head, you know, if you loved me, you would, I don't know, wash the dishes. Very silly example, but it's some people, you know, and it's just like, because in their mind, that person will say, you know, when you, they don't wash the dishes because they don't care, they just expect me to do everything. But maybe that person just grew up and they just never did it, and they're just not, they don't realize it's important to you. But we kind of mind read, and we expect other people to be mind readers. We expect other people to know what it is we want. But if we don't communicate, and I think so often we have that assumption, if you really love me, you would know that I don't like X or that I want you to do X. But sometimes people just don't. And yeah, I think that's important. I think it's important to remember people aren't mind readers, you know. And I know you've done NLP too. I always give the example of around communication, of that thing around, you know, you can say to your partner, can you go to the shop and buy me some washing powder, right? Now, washing powder to one person, to another person, can be completely different. And again, it's a really everyday example, but I think it's important because these are the things that people end up like falling out over, because in your mind, you're like, well, of course you would buy Ecova, you know, what else? And they might come home with like Asda Essential because they did exactly what you asked. But you're assuming all this other knowledge that they might pick up on. And it's just like, if you want Ecova, say you want Ecova, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they come back with a different brand and it's like, you don't get me, you don't understand me. And all these stories, all these narratives that are created from this quite innocent act. And you just reminded me, because I know we were talking about NLP, which we both studied, and it reminded me that in one of my workshops when I was learning about NLP, the guy went around the room and he said, right, everybody close your eyes and imagine a cat on a mat. Just imagine a cat on a mat. Okay, yeah, for, you know, 20 seconds, we all imagined it. And then one by one, he went through to everybody and said, okay, what's your cat on the mat like? What color is it? What color's the mat? What's your cat? What breed of cat? And everybody had a different type of cat and a different color or type of mat. This sounds, I've never shared this story before. It sounds so weird talking about it aloud. But it really helped me to see exactly what you're saying, that we all have our own internal representation of reality. And I think sometimes we have to realize that not everybody has the same internal representation of reality than we have, but we think because it's our reality that it's reality for everybody. Mm-hmm. And so we have to share what is going on for us and, you know, what's happening in our world, because it's quite often different to our partners. And I actually did this exercise with my husband years ago, and his cat and his mat were very different to mine.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important when you're building a life with somebody else, is getting clear on what you mean when you say, like, I want a house in the countryside, or I want a family. Because a family to some people might be the two of you and a dog, or it could be five kids.
Yeah.
What is it, yeah, you actually really want? Like, and I think so often we leave blanks, and of course humans, mm-hmm, we fill the blanks with our own, mm, meaning. And yes, it's just so wildly different. It really is. Yeah, we did a similar exercise, but with ducks. Like, so we said the sentence, like, now everyone's got their ducks in a row. And what kind of ducks? And some people had ducks at the fun fair. Some people had real ducks. Some people had like a duck with those little baby ducklings. And someone had a plastic duck in the bath. You know, it's just this idea that a duck is not a duck. It could be any representation. And we have to remember that.
A duck is not a duck. Yes, I love that mantra. Yeah, exactly. And we have to constantly distinguish what is a fact and what is a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's really important in a relationship, is to actually say, well, what do you mean by that? What does that look like for you?
Yeah. You
know? Mm-hmm. What does that feel like for you? Mm. And I think that's the key, really, isn't it? It's getting those values and having values that kind of match as much as is important to you as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You know? And I love what Brené Brown says as well in her work around asking, like, what is the story you're telling yourself? So when you have like an argument or a disagreement, and I said, what is the story you're telling yourself right now? Because that's so helpful, isn't it? Well, the story I'm telling myself is that you don't really care about me because of X, Y, and Z. And then they have an actual opportunity to go, oh, no, that's not what's happening here, actually. I'm just really worried about this other thing. So, yeah, that's a really good one, I think, for communication too.
Yeah, and another thing Brené Brown does, I listened to this in one of her podcast episodes, Unlocking Us, it's called. We'll put a link in the show notes. She was talking about how her and her husband have this sort of rating system where they can tell each other, you know, I'm about 4 out of 10 today. And it sort of signals to your partner, it signals your capacity, basically. So they have a family, you know, it could signal that maybe she can't do the school run that day, or she can't take the kids to sports, or whatever the thing is, the responsibilities of the day. And I love that. So they sort of have these check-ins with themselves. And she said when they're both at like a 4 or 5 out of 10, she's like, right, takeaway for dinner. Okay, we'll ask for help. But it's just having that dialogue, that regular dialogue, and check-in with each other, which I think is so good.
Yeah, we do that too. I didn't know Brené did it, but our numbers are higher, so anything over 30 is like, okay, things are a bit stressful right now. So I can say, look, I am a 35 right now, and it means that I'm feeling overwhelmed. Maybe there's just lots going on, and I just sometimes when there's too many stimuli, I can just go into a bit of a shutdown. So it's really important that I can just say that, and then nothing's taken personally, and vice versa. We just know that actually, let's just give each other a bit of space just to like get grounded again, get back into our bodies, and just be able to communicate properly. Really. But I think those check-ins are really important, because I think especially like for me, like if you're prone sometimes to being a bit emotional and changeable, it's not always obvious to other people how you're feeling on the inside, and it can seem like you're going from 0 to 60.
Yeah,
and it'll come out of the blue, and you can then end up snapping at someone. But if you just say, look, right now I'm a 30, it's a really easy way to stay kind of polite and kind, rather than like just lashing out and being like, oh my goodness, leave me alone, which is what I probably would have done in my 20s.
Me too. Me too. That is a big difference, actually. Yeah, comparing the quality of those relationships. Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. My equivalent to that is around my menstrual cycle. So I'll say winter is coming, which has its meaning in our in our home. But yeah, I think that's so important to communicate, you know, moods and seasonal changes and
I would say, well, yeah, imagine being in a house where both of you have a cycle, which is the opposite now. We used to both be synced with the new moon, and then we changed, and now we're on totally different cycles. So what, like, so Becky's now the full moon, I'm the new moon. And that just means that, like, the 3 weeks of the month, one of us is, like, premenstrual and irritated. And that can be really challenging. But it's okay. Again, after 7 years, we found balance with it. But in the early days, it was really difficult, because if you're both on your period at the same time, like, no one wants to cook, no one wants to do anything. Like, it's really tough. And then you've got low tolerance as well.
Yeah. You've been together such a long time, seven and a half years since you first met. What would you say have been the sort of key milestones in your relationship?
I really loved thinking about this as well. Before the interview, it was just really fun to reflect back and reminisce. That's the word, reminisce. So there have been quite a few. I would say driving lessons was big, because I have such a fear of driving. And Becky was really kind to take me out every weekend and deal with my somewhat teenage-like behavior at times. So it was really good when I finally passed my test and she didn't have to do that anymore. That was definitely a good thing. But in terms of like a real big highlight was going to this this animal sanctuary in Spain. It's a private animal sanctuary called Jacob's Bridge. It's interesting, when Becky and I first met, both of us ate meat, although I had been vegetarian previously. And it's something that had actually just not quite sat right with me for a while, but it just hadn't been, I just hadn't made a change at that point. But I, quite early on in our relationship, I went vegan. And then we went to Jacob's Ridge, which is this really gorgeous sanctuary. It's got horses and pigs and donkeys. And oh, it's in a really nice part of Spain. And there's a swimming pool. And you just like, you wake up in the morning and you can just say hi to the donkey. And then you help out around the sanctuary. It's a volunteer holiday, essentially. And it was really out of Becky's comfort zone to do something like that, to just go away and stay with strangers. Yeah, it was a big thing for her, personal development wise. And like, we met some really cool people there who then became really close friends later on. But she had to face fear, really. She had to face a big fear in terms of just staying around strangers and things like that. And then we also had this big kayaking trip, and she couldn't swim when we first met, and she was quite scared of water, and she ended up falling in. And we had this massive bonfire, and she burnt fear on the fire, and that was like this really like symbolic moment. Long story short, after being at Jacob's Ridge, she came home and then she became vegan. So that was big. And my mom then went to Jacob's Ridge and then she became vegan. And now my stepdad's vegan. So it's like this massive, it had a massive impact actually, going to Jacob's Ridge. But from that confidence perspective, it was really good for Becky and for me. And I think that the kind of that overall theme throughout our relationship is that self-growth, because both of us are quite ambitious in our own way. We both have our own interests, but we both kind of support and challenge each other to get out of our comfort zones and to grow into ourselves, I think, as we get older. And I listened to a podcast once, and she described it as like if you were going up a mountain, you know, one person might be ahead of the other, but then the other person might overtake the other person, but you keep moving together. And I think what happens in some relationships is one person gets onto the path of like self-growth, self-development, and they start changing, and the other person is reluctant to, and they almost start resenting the person who's changing. And there's this weird dynamic happens, and this person who's doing all the development then starts to feel unfulfilled. And that's when the relationships can break down, because people just become different. And I think, you know, in healthy, kind of robust, flexible relationships, there is that sense of you support each other to grow. And I think at Jacob's Ridge, that was definitely a really good example of where we supported each other. And yeah, it was really, it was really amazing. We've been twice now. Oh, it's amazing. And I would say having puppies was really big. And okay, so we're both vegans, so that can be controversial. But I had a sausage dog with my ex-partner. So my dog, Beatrice, and we decided collectively that we wanted to have one set of puppies with Beatrice, and they've been kept in the family. So we have one, they have one, my mum has one, and Katie's parents have one. But it was really lovely that whole process was really lovely, really. And we all lived together for a very short period of time while B was really close to having puppies, so that we could take it in turns to stay over in the room with her. And that was really lovely. And then obviously having to raise the puppies with her. So that was... Yeah, that was definitely a highlight, and it is one of the threads that weaves through it's almost like a tapestry with us. And you know, it's kind of unconventional, the relationship that we have with Emily and Katie, but it really works. You know, they're married, obviously we're married now, and we see them at least once a year and we go stay with them, and it's just really nice that we have this sausage dog family.
And that's, I love just, that.
Yeah. And I love that too. And we all have our own individual friendships and connections within that, and it's really lovely. But the biggest highlight for me is the wedding, I would say. I loved our wedding. And what I really love about our wedding is it absolutely embodied Becky and I and our values. And we really thought about the experience of the guests. You know, so obviously we had us as a flavour kind of woven into the event, but we also really thought about like, how is this going to be for other people? So we planned it. We had a weekend wedding and our close people arrived on like the Friday night. And we had, my stepdad was kind enough to cook for like 40 people on the Friday night. And so we had that. And that was a really nice kind of retreat feel because people got to know each other who had never met and have those conversations. And then of course we were able to wake up and just slowly get ready. So even the timing, like we got married, I think around 11:30 on in the morning. So it was just really lovely. It was all vegan. Becky made sure she had a vegan suit. That was really important to her. And so it was just, it was really us, you know, it was out in nature. There was a really, there was an ancient oak tree, that tree there. And it was, just, and we really thought about the people.
the oak tree you always talked about.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, it was the Folly Farm was the only venue we ever looked at. We kind of looked at it in 2015. That was too soon, and so then we ended up getting married in 2019. But it was like it was always Folly Farm. It was weird. It was like a love story with the place as well, and yeah, it was just amazing to be able to spend that time. And we chose people, like the way that we sat people at the tables as well, like a lot of thought went into like, oh, this person will probably really get on with this person. And we had a table of like people we just knew would all kind of get on, who didn't know each other at all, and just, yeah, different family members with each other. And it was really lovely. It was really good. So, and I'm given everything that then happened with lockdown and COVID, like 4 months later, we're just super grateful that we were able to celebrate with everyone because it's the last big family gathering for quite some time.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's great that you were able to have that. To get married for a start, but to have that big gathering with all of your loved ones right before lockdown.
Exactly. And we had, so like Katie did a reading and Becky's sister did a reading. It was nice to have that soul, you know. And I think that's it just showcases Becky and I well, our different personalities. And I think it was nice that we kind of just did it together. I think sometimes one can take more of a lead, and that can work in some relationships, don't get me wrong, but it was nice for it to be together. So that was a massive highlight.
Did you feel that marriage changed you in any way?
Because I thought about this at the time, I think for me personally, it was like an anchor had been dropped down, you know. It was that sense of grounding. It felt like, right, like this is us, but in a really good way, not in a settled way, but in a like you can exhale and just enjoy being with each other, enjoy being married. And of course, again, like all the messaging and stories we pick up as we're growing up, the word marriage can have so many different meanings. But I just remember, like, when I was a teenager, what I really wanted was like marriage and Marks and Spencers. And I think it's because my parents divorced when I was 2, and so for me, you know, and my mom remarried later, but I was like kind of 11 years old when she married. So those formative years, I had a single parent, which was amazing for me, probably more hard work for my mom. But I really did want the kind of marriage and Marks and Spencers when I was like 17, 18. I wanted that sense of stability. I looked to my grandparent, because I had 3 sets of great grandparents as well growing up. So I was really fortunate to have that, the older generations. And so like my gran and grandpops had been together plus 50 years. My grandma and granddad had been together 50 years. You know, there were a lot of people around me in these relationships that I looked to, and I thought, I want that sense of partnership, because for me, it really is about partnership and having that kind of co-adventurer, you know, someone you can have fun with and explore and, grow and share memories, really.
Have you experienced any setbacks or any big challenges in your relationship? And how did you navigate those?
Yes. I think we both agree. We're quite surprised we've made it in some ways, because I think when we got together, we both had a lot of stuff still to work through, and we didn't always have those check-ins. We didn't always communicate clearly. You know, back in 2016, I ended up taking a minimum wage job. I'd been made redundant from my job previously, and I decided I wanted to get experience in the mental health industry. So I ended up taking a massive pay cut, and right at the same time that Becky had as well, but she was the main provider, and she often does take on responsibility for things, and I allow her to take on responsibility for things. And that put us under a lot of pressure, because she really felt it. Like, I think, you know, there was a lot of fear coming up around money and just pressure and wanting to like make everything good, but not knowing how. And I wasn't necessarily in the best space either. You know, I think I have always, without sounding dramatic, but I always find it challenging sometimes to be human. And I talk about that about a lot on my podcast, Brave Hearts Rising, but like being human is messy, and being in employment can be really tricky, I think, when you're an empath or when you have anxiety and different things. And there was a lot of change happening, what with redundancy and just all these different things happening. And I think I haven't always been good at communicating. I think the thing about me is I'm really great at holding space for other people to be vulnerable. I'm not always good at being it myself. And I think that can be really challenging for Becky, because she's not a mind reader. And it can be tough being with someone who is as emotional as I am. As you know, I'm also a Pisces. So it can be a roller coaster at times. And it's totally normal for me to cry on the bus, and I don't have a problem with that. But for some people, Becky can take things quite literally. So if I say I'm feeling a certain way, she might take that quite literally. And so from the outside, it could seem a bit stressful and worrying at times, I think, particularly when I started working in mental health, because I was working with people with severe and enduring mental health issues, so people with paranoid schizophrenia, people who had experienced childhood sexual abuse. And I was sitting one-to-one with people and listening. And that was hard for me too, because these were really heavy topics. So that was a real, that was a really challenging time. And how we got through it was, I think, honesty, a sense of something bigger as well. I think I've said this at the beginning of the interview, our partnership is kind of rooted in something deeper than superficial. Not that other people's are superficial, but I just mean, like, I've had quite a few relationships in my life. Obviously, the longest was like not even 3 years. So this has by far gone past any previous kind of relationship length. And I learned a lot in my 20s and early 30s about relationships. And I don't know, I just knew that she was the one that I wanted to build my life with, but we did have to iron out some kinks. And you know, throughout our entire relationship, Becky's dad was quite poorly. He had cancer, and that was tough. That was really tough for her to. So there was all of that going on in the background as well. And what's really difficult when you have a family member, particularly a parent with cancer, is that you're kind of grieving while they're still here, because his prognosis was not good. I mean, he did break all the records for how long he lived with cancer, but he had cancer for over 10 years. And he did amazingly well. And thank goodness he was at the wedding. But that was hard, you know, because, you know, my dad died when he was 47 and I was in my late 20s. So I had to go through a real journey of processing all of that. And it's tough. It really throws up a lot of stuff. And I know you've spoken to other people on the podcast who have lost parents. And again, with your childhood and all the different things that happen when a parent dies, it opens up all sorts of questions and regrets and wishes and sadness. And it's this big roller coaster, and there's no reasoning to it. There's no like, well, I will be sad at this time and then it's going to get easier. It's like it can get easier and then suddenly you go boof and you're in it again. And that's difficult. And I haven't always been the best at holding space for that. Sometimes Becky is so good at seeming like everything's good. And because I'm used to drama, if I don't see it, I don't always react to it. And it's kind of anomalous because of the work that I do and how I hold space for other people. But I think it's true that often it's with your loved ones that you can struggle to do for your loved ones what you do for other people. I think that's what I would say there. So I would say that's definitely that was definitely challenging. Yeah, that's definitely been challenging. And you know, and again, it all comes back to this sense of around your journeys as individuals in a relationship and all the things that you go through. I love that the book The Zahir by Paulo Coelho, who wrote The Alchemist, and in it there's this passage about how people think about marriages as like train tracks, always set a certain distance apart, and they just go on and they're always like that, but actually how we grow at different times. So sometimes we're further apart and then we come closer together and then we go further apart. It's not linear, you know. I think being human isn't linear, and that's something I talk about a lot. Like, we are cyclical and things are ever changing, and we have to remember that in our relationships as well, that you know, things aren't always going to be a constant, and there'll be times when you feel distant from one another because you're going through your own stuff, or they're going through their own stuff, or maybe exciting things are happening in your life but things don't feel great in theirs. And but you know, but you always come back together at some point if it's meant to last, and if you don't, then generally that's when the relationship ends. But I think, yeah, I like that. I like that analogy, and remembering that it's okay to do things at your own pace, and that there are no shoulds in a relationship. Like, it's down to the two of you, or the three of you if you're into polyamory, like, or however many people, but it's up to you in the relationship to decide what the boundaries are, what's okay, what's not okay, what you want to experience in your relationship, what you don't want to experience in your relationship. And I think it's so important to get clear with yourself about what that looks like. Like, what does a healthy relationship look like to you? What does healthy communication look like to you? You know, are you someone who always wants to eat dinner at the table, or do you really like actually chilling out on the sofa? Like, what are the deal makers for you? Like, you know, how do you want to spend your days? And that's something that will always drive me. And I know we spoke about this last week, but having had, you know, my dad died so young and from a genetic illness that thankfully I don't have, but was tested for, and it was 50-50, that perspective of going, you know, life isn't a given. We don't know how long we have here. It's really easy to forget. So when you're getting caught up in, how many likes do I have? Or, you know, what, I've got all these chores to do. Or, you know, you get so caught up in the busyness and into the minutiae that you forget the big picture is, like, we have this one wild, precious life, as Mary Oliver kind of famously said. And what are we going to do with that? How do we want to be spending our time, our days? Who do we want to be spending that time with? And I think that's really important. And I think what also helps is to recognize each other as individuals. I think there's so many stories out there about how, you know, like, you complete me. And whilst that sounds lovely and sounds romantic, it's, you do have to complete yourself first. And then, like I was saying to you earlier, it's almost like the relationship is then the cherry on top. Like, otherwise the story is that as a single person, you're somehow not whole, which is just not true. And when you get to that place where you're feeling more grounded in yourself, when you're accepting of your flaws, and when you can kind of look in the mirror and just say, oh, hey, you know what? You're all right. I like you. I like spending time together. Let's have some fun. Like, it's such a nicer energy to live in. And then I think when you're already in that kind of good energy, it just makes it easier, I think, to meet someone else. And it makes it easier to stay with someone else as well, because you're not in a relationship out of scarcity. You're not in the relationship out of fear, like, oh, maybe I won't meet anyone else, so I'll just cling on to this one because I don't want to go back to being single again. I don't know, it's not always that simple, but yeah, I think it's really important to, you know, have that relationship with yourself first. You know, it's like the relationship you have with yourself is the longest relationship you're ever going to have. Yeah. So, you know, make sure it's a good one, because we don't know how long we're here for, you know, and you don't want to spend your whole life beating yourself up and being inadequate and being mean to yourself. And, you know, and I come at that from a perspective of someone who still can be quite critical, but historically I was much more critical, and I've really worked to get to a place where actually I can have a laugh with myself, and I can, you know, I like that. I think that's the other key ingredient for me. And I know you haven't really asked me about ingredients yet, but the key ingredient is like silliness and fun, you know, silly voices. And, you know, we have a lot of silly characters. Like, we drove to Scotland once, which is, it was like a 12-hour journey, and we like took it in turns to mock podcast interview each other. You know, we'll take on different accents, like, you know, pretend to be two northern blokes and just be like, right. Just have these random conversations. You know, more recently, well, the last couple of years, we pretend, we have these two characters that are snails, and we pretend to be snails. Everybody cheers Becky up, and it's fun, and it's just so silly, isn't it? It's just so silly, but that's what makes, I think, life fun. That's what adds the colour and the flavour. But yeah, respecting each other's individuality. And like, Becky has lots of different, like, she's really into whiskey and coffee, and, like, you know, she has a, like, a, she runs a small, like, a whiskey tasting once a month with a small group of people called Whiskers and Tails, and they taste whiskey and talk about whiskey, and she loves that, and she says that's a massive thing for her. I don't need to be part of that. Mm-hmm. And I think getting clear on that is important, because for some people, they want to spend all their holidays with their partner, and that's fine. If that's, that works for you too, do it. But for other people, they need to have that week away with their girlfriends or with their pals, whoever. And so, yeah, it's being clear about your boundaries. What do you need to feel fulfilled as a human and as an individual within a relationship with somebody else? You know, you don't have to forsake yourself. Obviously, there's always going to be compromise in relationships, but it's making sure that you still hold on to those integral pieces that bring you joy and make you feel alive.
And then you get to share it with that other person and generate that with that other person, rather than relying on them to fill something that you lack, or provide something that you lack.
Yeah, it's almost as you said that, I saw this image of like this empty cup and you putting it out there and just expecting them to fill it up constantly. And it's just like, you need to like share the cup around.
Have a toast. With full cups, two full cups. Yeah.
You can fill your own cup. Your friends can fill your cup. Everyone can like play their part in like creating that joy in your life. And just, again, not putting all the onus on this, on your relationship to like somehow complete your life and your sense of fulfillment.
Would you say that, because it sounds to me that you have this wonderful relationship that's built on this really solid foundation of a great friendship. You have a lot of fun together. You can play together, be silly together, and also support each other through all kinds of challenges and difficult times in your lives, and also really push each other and challenge each other positively to, you know, go after your goals and go out of your comfort zone. And there's just this wonderful sense of support and celebration, I think, in your relationship. And it's just so wonderful to hear such a beautiful love story like yours. And I wonder if you feel that, because I know we were talking about, you know, the messages that we receive growing up about relationships and how our early relationships can shape us. Would you say that you've learned a lot about relationships in the one that you are in over those 7 years to get to this place now where you look back on it and you're like, wow, you know, this is such a strong, thriving relationship? Or would you say you had some good role models, and this could be, you know, it's not either or, would you say that you had some good role models as well growing up, family or otherwise?
No, I definitely would. You know, like I said, with my great-grandparents, I mean, obviously you don't know how the relationship was behind closed doors, but, you know, they did have a friendship. I'm thinking particularly of my gran and grandpops. And I always remember my gran giving me the silliest advice. It's like, I might be in my 80s, but grandpops still wouldn't have me going to bed with my bra on. You should never sleep with your bra on. From like a health perspective, she was talking about that. It's just really funny to have my great grandma, my gran, tell me that when I was like 12. Oh, gran. I think for me, I think my parents mainly, though, like my mom and my stepdad, because they got together when I was around 10. And so my mom would have been kind of late 20s, maybe just 30s. And now looking back, it's so funny because, like, at my age, I would, you know, mom had a 20-year-old daughter. I'm like, whoa. I don't know how they did that. But they have a real sense of friendship. You know, my parents always having a sense of fun and joking with each other. And they also have their difficulties communicating. And I think it's important to see that as well. Like, because I think what can happen sometimes is people can grow up thinking and seeing a relationship and thinking that that relationship is like perfect. And then only when they're much older, they hear about some of the challenges that were there, or they find out this thing that kind of rocks their world. And I think actually seeing people have challenging times or disagreements is healthy, because you then see how they work through that, right? You see them navigate those challenges, because there will always be challenges in relationships, mm-hmm. particularly if you're pushing and kind of supporting and challenging each other to grow. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, it's just natural. I think it's healthy, because you kind of end up being like each other's teachers in some ways, and you mirror things back to each other. So I would say seeing their relationship was always important. And for me, because they didn't ever fulfill those kind of stereotypical roles in a way, like my stepdad always does the cooking. You know, they always share things fairly, basically. Like, mum has her things that she does. Mac has his things that he does. And it works for them. And they do what works for them. And I think that's what's really important. And again, the communication part has always been important. And mum was always really clear about no shouting in the house because of things that happened in the past. And, that, you know, and it was always really clear from the beginning that, like, while they're both my parents, Mac was my stepdad. And particularly, I think that was important as a teenager, because you know what teenagers are like, pushing back against boundaries. But like, mom took the lead on parenting and Mac was the support role there. And that worked. It's not easy, I think, being in a relationship and raising a teenage girl who's emotional, basically. So yeah, they were my main, you know, and I guess we all look at films and things, but I don't know how healthy they were. Like, you know, I always remember being massive into the Bodyguard.
Ooh, yeah.
Whitney, I was like 11 years old and it was just like, oh.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a whole other story. But yeah,
A lot of narratives of being rescued and a lot of happily ever after narratives.
And so I would add to that then, because like, outside of the context specifically of relationships that inspired my mom, you know, she was young when she had me and she was kind of a borderline. Well, my mom was young when she had me and she was definitely a feminist and she was a student. And so I think I had different stories from other people, you know, like we had cups in the house that said every mother is a working mother and never give up. And, you know, I remember anti-war posters and it like as a child on the walls and things like this. And, you know, and questioning my language, mum would always say, like, it's a firefighter, not necessarily a fireman. You know, so right from a young age, I was taught to question like gendered language and gender roles. And that has definitely shaped me for sure. And also that sense of independence, because I think what mum did was she was really clear with me growing up that she wasn't going to have relationship with people necessarily if I didn't get on with them. And some people may agree or disagree with that, but it was really important when she got engaged to my stepdad, like she did have a conversation with me about that. Rather than, I think some people, they just go, well, it's just happening, you know, tough.
Mm.
You know, she always kind of brought me into the discussion. And I think that worked well. And like she, you know, we all have different names as well. She didn't take my stepdad's name because she didn't want it to be an us and them. So yeah, she kept her name. And that sense of independence as well, and that sense of being I don't want to say strong woman, but that sense of having your independence and kind of fulfilling your own needs before and not being rescued. I think that was really, it was big messaging. That said, because of the way that my mom is and how she always thinks, all right, it's better off if I just do everything myself. I was definitely, you know, my mum was definitely always on a pedestal for me, and she always did stuff for me, and she still will. You know, she was putting money into my bank account right into my 30s. It's like, just we kind of joke about that umbilical cord, not quite ever. the invisible umbilical cord. But that's okay, because we were really close for a really long time and still are really close now. And I really value and cherish our grown-up relationship, and that was something that was a real conscious intention for me as I kind of entered my 30s. Was I want to have a grown-up relationship with my mom. I don't want to always go into that dynamic of parent child of mommy, come on, rescue me, because I think I did have that rescuer thing, but it was about my mom rescuing me and not necessarily someone else.
You mentioned to me last week when we had our chat, you mentioned the significance of, is it your auntie Gay?
Yeah, my mom's best friend.
Tell me about 1998 and you and Auntie Gay.
Oh yeah, so I mean, 1998 was an interesting year. I was 15, and so my Auntie Gay was living in Brighton at the time, and I would go and visit. And I remember she had a housemate as well, who was also, me and my Auntie Gay happened to be gay. And it was just something within me, I started questioning like my sexuality, my identity. And so it was quite an interesting, it was a difficult time really, because again, the stories that we're told, I mean, things have really moved on in the last 20 years or so, but at the time, you know, it was like, you're gay, straight, or bi, for a start. And so, yeah, I went through this real period of questioning, and then I decided to come out. So I was in Brighton for the weekend, and we were walking along the beach, and I remember feeling really nervous. But I told my auntie Gay, I think I might be gay. And I even remember at the time, like before coming out, like I Googled, there was Google just like, I think I might be gay. Now what do I do? And like printed off, because back in the day you would do that, like print off this like PDF. I still have it. It was specifically for young people questioning their sexuality, because it was like, where do you go when you're thinking this stuff as a young person? There's more stuff now because you could literally go onto Instagram, but back then there was no Instagram. No, there was literally a search engine, and that was that. So that was a really big thing for me. I knew I would be okay, but it was still really scary. And so I ended up asking Auntie Gay to come out to my mum as well, for me and my parents. And I remember mum in the kitchen saying like, oh, is there anything you want to tell me? And me being like, no, nothing. Talk to Auntie Gay. So yeah, it was brave looking back. It was brave. And still, it was brave. But I'm pleased with younger me. I mean, it was definitely tumultuous thereafter. It's a really tough time, I think, when you're a teenager, navigating your identity in the world when so many people want to tell you who you are. And I think that's probably why I have the podcast Breakups Rising, because it's about creating a safe space for people to be who they want to be and not who the world tells them they should be. Because even at the time, like, I remember feeling not gay enough, like my hair's not gay enough, and I remember like thinking I don't look gay enough, and I'm not gay enough for the gays, and I'm not straight enough for the straights, like where do I fit in, you know? And so that was difficult, definitely, and I definitely felt like I needed to look a certain way. It wasn't a difficult time. I mean, luckily I said to you last week, like I did go to a girls' school, and I went to a girls' school where it was actually okay. You know, I wasn't the only gay person. There were actually three couples in our school. I quite quickly ended up going out with someone from my year. So that was okay, and I wasn't bullied. And I think that's partly because I'm already quite awkward and I only had a group of friends of about three, so it was okay. I was a real mix of geek and rebel at school. It's like I would go to after school German club and it would literally be me and my best friend who I dragged along. And I also started smoking quite young. You know, it was like this real juxtaposition of identities. And I've always kind of had that and never really known quite where to fit myself.
Yeah, you mentioned the intersectionality of identities when we talked last week.
Oh, so many identities. I think the quest for belonging has been ongoing for a really long time, like since I was little. I think I have, and maybe you've experienced this too, but I think being Pisces, being kind of tapping into the big picture and always thinking about how we're all interconnected and life and death and everything in between, it's like that search for meaning has always been really big for me. And so my identities intersect in terms of being like a queer woman, a vegan, a wife, a daughter, and being like highly sensitive, being an empath. I don't know, being the person who wants to make a difference. Like I'm kind of starting to embrace the term activist. I kind of have a bit of a weird syndrome around it, because you know, you almost feel like, well, who am I to call myself an activist? But it's something I definitely am embracing more and more, because when I look back to my childhood, I mean, I gave a talk on animal testing when I was like 11 at school, like you know, again, kind of the part through my mum. But you know, I've really been passionate about challenging the status quo from a really young age. I remember at school, we were probably about 8 or 9, and we had the period talk. And I don't know what talk the boys had at junior school, no idea. But I remember we had the period talk, and then one of the boys asked me what our comp chat had been about, and I told him. And one of my teachers told me off. And I remember feeling so mad. And I was just like, what, miss? Your husband doesn't know you have periods. I was so incensed. I just thought it was so utterly ridiculous that we couldn't talk to the boys about having periods at school, because it's like, because you know, it happens to a large part of society, and so why would we keep that secret? It felt really odd to me. So yeah, I definitely I've never really fit in. So I would say yeah, and also just a bit quirky, but definitely like the queer vegan kind of empath are my key identities, I would say. And also, I guess, as a facilitator, my identity as someone who holds space for other people is a really big part of my identity. And also as a podcaster, I think the thing is our identities are constantly evolving, you know, and stepping into those things more, into a creative. Like I grew up thinking I wasn't creative because I hated art class, but actually I find most of my joy when I'm being creative and I'm having creative conversations and putting together workshops and things like that. So
looking back on these 7 years in your relationship, what would you say are the key lessons that you've learned about love?
Oh, that's a really good question. That's a really good question. Wow. Patience, definitely. I would say looking back, the key lessons have been to really be self-aware around how you're contributing to a situation and like the role that you're playing, and to be really honest with yourself about your needs and be honest about what you're assuming as well. It's so easy to mind read, like think that you know what other people are thinking and not even realize you're doing it sometimes. Like sometimes we can assume a lot, and actually taking that step back and just thinking in a situation, like what do I need from this situation? And I think what can happen, and like so many of us have been conditioned to people please, and what happens if you're a people pleaser is you say yes when you mean to say no, and then you end up feeling resentful, or you don't really fulfill like a promise, or you don't do it like right, like well, you know, you kind of can end up just half doing something And then that can be really frustrating to the other person. Whereas if you had just said, actually, do you know what? I don't fancy going out to dinner tonight. I'd rather just stay home. And I think that's still something that can happen where I say yes. And actually, if I just checked in with my mood, I could have said, you know what? I'm in a bit of a weird place right now. I think I'm better off just staying home and chilling out for a bit rather than going, oh yeah, I'll go on that walk with you. And then you end up having some kind of small quarrel about something just because actually you're just in a different headspace, I think. So getting really honest with yourself about what you need and where you're at, checking in with yourself. I think also just being really clear about what you want is really important. So being clear on what you want, both now, but also for the future, you know, because you are creating a life together. And so it's important that you're kind of on a similar path. It doesn't have to, you know, because things can change all the time. But, you know, if one of you wants to, is fixed on living in the country and the other one is fixed in living in central London, like that could be an issue. And you need to like decide whether that, how important that is to you and where are you willing to compromise? Like what actually is a deal breaker and what actually is like, well, when I think about it, yeah, I thought, because so often what happens is we can get fixated on something and think that this one thing is going to be the magical answer. Like, you know, when I've got more money, then I'm going to move house and I'm going to feel amazing and life's going to be perfect. And you can get really fixated then on like getting this particular job. Like when I have this salary of this much money, and actually, and this is what I love about Marianne Cantwell's Free Range Humans approach to life, is actually when you take that step back and go, well, what is it that I really want here? What is this new house going to give me? Right. Oh, I want to spend more time by the sea. Well, maybe you could just rent an Airbnb for a couple months a year and that will fulfill that need of yours. It's not always so black and white. And I think playing around with possibilities and actually thinking about what's the thing beneath the thing, what is it you really want? Because actually, when you think of it like that, there are so many different ways to get that, you know, and it's not that old school way of thinking of like, if you want to spend time in Italy, you have to buy a house there. And that's quite a big thing, but you could literally like spend a month initially in the summer and have an amazing time, write a book, go for walks. Like you can make that happen if you want to make it happen. It doesn't have to be an either or situation. And I think that's really important. Thinking about what are the ingredients that you want within a relationship? What are the ingredients that they want? Like how can you make that happen? I'm guessing a lot of the people listening to the podcast are going to be into things like personal development. So like personality profiling, I think, can be really useful, whether it's the five love languages or it's Myers-Briggs. Or there are so many out there, aren't there? Enneagram. And it doesn't matter so much about the labels, but what matters is getting to know how your person operates in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, are they a thinker? Like, do they not need time to think about situations before they respond to them? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, are they big on their feelings? Because for some people, like I can be quite big picture and I can be quite whimsical as well. So I could just throw ideas out there, like we could do this and we could do that. But then Becky might think I'm being really serious about that thing, and then that might freak her out and she finds it a bit more difficult because she'll go straight into the right, well, how much money would the mortgage be? Like, how much would this cost? And like, you know, how would we make this work? So she'll go straight into the planning and the logistics. Whereas I'm more like floaty, you know, like, ooh, this could work. So being really clear and understanding how both of you operate. And, you know, if one of you is extroverted, one of you is introverted, like knowing that one of you might need more quiet time or the other, you know, and it's like giving space to each other to thrive in the way that they thrive, because we're not all the same duck.
Yeah,
a silly example, just for some whimsy in there, but it's like we need different things to thrive. And it's knowing that about your partner. It's knowing that maybe like they'll need that space and time to think of a decision. And actually, if you just go in and go, oh, we're going to do this thing, that might be a bit like, whoo, that's a big change. Maybe I need a bit of space to like get used to that change. And me not going yes immediately isn't a rejection of your idea. It's not me like trying to dampen your fire. It's just saying, right, I need some time to think about this. And it's just getting really clear. And I think like the love languages one is really important, isn't it? And knowing that what, you know, because for some people, like they love gifts, you know, and I know lots of us like gifts, but you know, for some people it's like really important, isn't it? And so, but if you're not really into it, you might be like, oh, but I much would have, I just want you to fix the light bulb. You know, if acts of service is your love language. And so it's getting really clear on actually, because often I think we speak to each other in our own love languages.
Totally.
And then expect the response to be the response that we would give. But obviously,
so true.
What they really want you to do is like fix something, and you've like given them this expensive gift, and they're like, why would you spend money on that? Like, you know, we could have done this instead. And it's just not, again, it's not making assumptions, isn't it, about
exactly
what other people need or want or how they're going to experience something.
I love things like the love languages, personality profiles for getting to know your partner, you know, the kind of like tools really that can, they can really facilitate conversations that can help you to get to know each other. One of my clients actually did that with someone that she's dating. They decided to do these quizzes and tests together. I think they did the love languages one and the personality profile one and the attachment theory one, so that they can understand and honor their differences. And yeah, like the love languages is a great example, because for someone, you know, saying I love you might be really a really powerful affirmation of love. Whereas for the other person, it's doing the washing up. You know, it's totally different. Doing the washing up for them is saying I love you, but in a different way. And I think we always give and receive love in our language. What I've noticed is that we often do speak different languages. So then it's like I'm speaking German and the other person speaking Japanese, and we're communicating love, but we just can't understand each other. or we're not seeing, we're not really appreciating how that other person may be communicating love, because it's just not the way that we would.
Exactly. Because again, I think so many of us assume that the way that we grew up or what we saw is how it is. And we don't always realize that there are all sorts of other ways of being in the world. And it's just really, and I like that, the way that you put that, and noticing the ways that someone's saying I love you in ways that you wouldn't say it yourself. And actually, that's really sweet when you think about it like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What would you say, I know we've touched on them before, but what would you say are the key ingredients of a happy and fulfilled relationship?
I think knowing, like, as I've said a few times, like knowing what that looks like for you, like what does it mean to be fulfilled in a relationship for you? So that self-awareness piece is really important, because it's, I think it starts with the individuals, but then within the relationship, getting really clear on what your values are, like how you want to spend your time. For me personally, so for us, it's fun, it's playfulness, it's having important conversations about important conversations about how we can create change in the world. It's having adventures and wild swimming. It's always kind of pushing each other and supporting each other to grow. It's having kind of, it's like the Venn diagram, isn't it? It's like having those shared interests, but also having all your own lovely, wonderful things that you do, that you go off and fulfill you as an individual as well. And I think that's so important. But it's the honesty, I think. Honesty, silliness, I would say loyalty. I'm just honoring each other's needs as best you can, and it's never going to be perfect, and there will always be rocky times. There will always be times when you don't communicate, because I think that's called being human. Sometimes we just say things without thinking, or we get wrapped up in our own way of seeing the world that we forget that someone else is going through something in that moment. It's easy to get caught up, and I think it's about being gentle with yourself and having those check-ins, right? Just all, you know, and I love that idea that, like, you know, every day we kind of recommit to the relationship that we're in by choosing to be in that relationship. And I think that's where the honesty is important, right? Because if you're being honest with yourself and you're staying in the relationship, then the idea is that you're in a relationship that's making you happy and fulfilled. But if you're not honest with yourself, and you end up just, if you stop listening to your intuition, then you can end up staying in a relationship that you're actually not wanting to be in, but you're too scared to leave, or, you know, you're nervous to leave because it's dramatic, right? Ending a relationship is a big thing to do sometimes. So I think people can end up staying in relationships past their time because they don't check in. And that's why I think self-awareness is so key. And that recommitting, because we're ever changing, aren't we? We're ever evolving. Who I am today is not who I'm going to be in 2 years' time. And the same for Becky. So we have to, kind of enjoy the journey, I think. I think that's really important. I'm remembering that you're on your own journey with yourself too. You know, as different things happen, as you have to go through things like grief or joy, all that, you know, as you experience the whole spectrum of being like a human and all the different emotions, like we all have our own individual events. So whilst you might be with someone at the time that they experience a death, they're still going, that's still a very private personal journey to them that they have to navigate. And so that's why for me, I think it's remembering that you're individuals, you know, that come together for this partnership. And in my world, an adventure, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's key, is remembering that it's not all about the two of you.
So final question then, this is a question that I love to ask everybody at the end of Real Love Stories. What advice would you give to your younger self with the wisdom and knowledge that you have now?
Oh, younger me. I'd give her so much advice. She really struggled, I think, because my parents divorced when I was young and I never really saw my dad. I think she struggled to feel worthy, definitely. I think I thought that if my dad loved me, he would have spent time with me. And obviously now looking back, he was in his 20s and he had no idea what he was doing. And I have total empathy now, but at the time, obviously, it was really tricky. So the advice I would give to my younger self is to know that you are worthy, know that you are a beautiful human that brings your own joy and light and colour and creativity to the world. Know that your worldview is important. Your take on the world matters, and your passion to want to change the world matters. And I think really importantly is, it's difficult to put into words some of these things, you know, because they tap into like real kind of deep emotion, but in the sense of like value yourself, value your body. To my younger self, I want to say, always back yourself. Like, don't betray yourself in favor of pleasing somebody else, because so often we can say yes to somebody and in turn say no to ourselves, and actually in some circumstances that can be really damaging. And I think many of us will have experienced that at some point in their teens and their 20s, where they've put themselves in situations that weren't probably the most healthy or safe situations, but we did it because who knows. But I think it's so important to know that you are worthy, and that, know your boundaries, uphold your boundaries, and also know that you have the power to put boundaries in place, you know. I think that's just so important, like you get to choose. And I think the big one is, like, you don't need a male approval to be worthy, because I think I did see, because of that relationship with my dad, I think I really sought that out. That's a whole other podcast episode, but I would say, you don't need validation from men to be a worthy human.
Oof. Oh my God, that's really powerful, really powerful advice. And what a note to end the episode on. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Oh, Lisa, I could talk to you for hours more. Our track record, this is the second conversation we've had, isn't it? And reaching the 2 hour mark. Is there anything else that you would love to share with our dear listeners before we end the episode? And I will link to all of your wonderful coaching and podcasts and all of the wonderful work that you do. And please let us know links and things of where people can find you.
I think my main message always is just be gentle with yourself. Listen to your body. build give into your life. I think we can be so push all the time, and we put so many high expectations on ourselves, and we put all these shoulds in place, and just kind of let go of that. Like, literally take a deep breath, you know. It's so powerful to take some deep breaths and just really, yeah, listen to your body. I always say the body whispers before it screams. And I think right now, a year after being under lockdown measures, now more than ever, it's really important that you take that time to do things that soothe you and that kind of soothe your nervous system. So be gentle. You know, you're doing your best. You're only human. You are navigating the world as best you can. So be kind to yourself. I am LisaPascoe_UK on Instagram. That's my favorite place to be. I am on Facebook. I think I'm Lisa Pascoe Rewilding. But the podcast is called Brave Hearts Rising, and that's on all places you find podcasts. And if you like conversations that go kind of beneath the surface of things and actually are kind of important conversations about what it means to be human and all of those messy topics around people pleasing and creativity and activism and all of these things, and you love Brave Hearts Rising, and I'd love to have you come listen.
Yay. I will put all of the links into the show notes of everything you've just mentioned as well.
Thank you so much, Vicky. It's been such a pleasure.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I've just had such a lovely afternoon talking to you. And thank you so, so much for sharing your love story. Just such an honour to hear it, hold space for you today. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoy this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes, and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say, best podcast ever. Thank you.